10, 9, ignition sequence start, 6.
Well, I'm David Cook, and I was a radio receiver engineer at the telescope at the time of Apollo 11.
David was 37, and he and his wife and family had recently moved from Adelaide to the Parkes Telescope in New South Wales, Australia. It sits in a sparsely populated area of a sparsely populated country.
We were living out on the site of the telescope, so it was fairly isolated. I had been there for a couple of years, and then we heard that we would be taking part in the Apollo 11 project. Well, I guess we were quite intrigued, but then we began to wonder, now, what would we have to do, and then take notice when we start to meet Americans that were bringing in other equipment, and knowing what we had to do and make sure we did it properly.
The Parkes Telescope is a radio astronomy telescope. We use it to study the radio emissions from the stars.
John Sarkissian is an operations scientist currently working at the Parkes Telescope.
Whenever you say telescope, the first thing the public imagines is a telescope you look through. But really, it's just a very large, very sensitive radio antenna. But when it was built, it was the most advanced, most sensitive radio telescope in the world. NASA wanted the world to be able to see the moonwalk, and they needed the largest and most sensitive radio antennas in the world tracking the moon at that critical moment to ensure that they could get the strongest and best signal possible so that the world can view that moonwalk with the greatest possible clarity.
David Cook was the one responsible for managing the receiving equipment for the signal sent back to Earth from the Apollo moon lander.
We copy you down, Eagle.
I was simply to monitor the output of the receiver and make sure that it was at a maximum at all times.
At a little past 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time on the 20th of July 1969, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin arrived on the moon in their Eagle lander. In Australia, it was 6:17 a.m. in the morning of the 21st. The plan was that the astronauts would sleep for 5 hours before beginning the moonwalk around lunchtime in Australia, when the moon would be rising above the Parkes horizon.
However, Armstrong and Aldrin had other ideas. They were so excited from the landing. I mean, Armstrong's heart rate was 156 beats per minute when he landed. He had an enormous adrenaline rush. There was no way that either of them were about to go to sleep. You know, just imagine, you've just landed on the moon and say, OK, then now we're going to sleep. So he exercised his option of having an earlier than planned moonwalk.
It looked as if David Cook and the team at Parkes would miss out completely. The whole moonwalk would be done and dusted before the moon had risen in Australia. NASA would use its telescope in America, where the moon would be visible to capture the signals.
However, the astronauts took so much time in preparing to, you know, to exit, you know, donning their spacesuits, depressurizing the cabin and so on, that by the time they were ready to come out, the moon was on the verge of rising here at Parkes.
The 64-metre-wide dish at Parkes was tilted over as far as it could go, waiting for the moon to appear. But as the moon slowly inched its way up, a violent squall hit the telescope.
There were winds of over 70, 80 kilometres an hour. With the dish fully tipped over, it's at its most vulnerable. And suddenly two gusts of wind of 110 kilometres an hour slammed into the dish, pushing it back against its zenith axis pinions, causing the tower that telescope's resting on to shudder and sway.
And for a while, we were afraid maybe we'd have to stow the telescope point the telescope upwards to its safest position to save the telescope from damage. But the director at the time, John Bolton, decided that we should stay as long as possible at that position. And then we began to see the signal appear on a little green TV set, which was the picture coming from the camera from the lunar lander. That was a pretty exciting time.
Although the surface appeared to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it, it's almost like a powder.
And we saw the image of Armstrong in his spacesuit coming down the ladder, and putting his foot down on the moon and then making his famous speech.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
For the first few minutes of the moon landing broadcast, NASA used shadow images received from its telescope in California and a smaller one outside Canberra. But as soon as the moon was in the dead centre of the Parkes dish, its pictures were by far the best. NASA switched to Parkes images for the rest of the two-hour TV broadcast.
You might ask one of the Parkes people if their labour was not in vain. They've given us the best TV yet.
And in that entire period, the winds only slightly abated. They were still very high. The telescope was operating well outside all safety limits, and in fact towards the end of the moonwalk, it began to hail at Parkes with again high winds and hail, yet the signal did not degrade at all.
Houston TV, Sydney Video.
Go ahead, Sydney Video, Houston TV.
At 11:12:30 gets approximately, a hailstorm with the winds up to 45 knots swept through Parkes. We saw no noticeable degradation of picture.
Later in the afternoon, I went down and looked up at the moon and thought how amazing it was that we'd put a man up there. I'd help to put a man up there on the moon.
Standing there looking at the moon above his beloved telescope with the storm brewing in the background, David took a photograph. At the same moment, Buzz Aldrin took a now famous photo looking back at Earth from the moon. Zoom in on Australia and the storm clouds over Parkes are there.
We actually have a picture of that famous storm from both ends, from the Earth looking up and from Parkes, and from the Sea of Tranquility on the moon looking back at the Earth.
The Apollo 11 moon landing was watched by an estimated 600 million people worldwide. And for the vast majority of that famous moonwalk, the world was watching pictures received through the Parkes telescope.
There was a reason why NASA came to Australia to support the missions. You know, our engineers and astronomers and technicians were some of the finest in the world.
50 years on, and the pictures of the moon landing still have a magic that inspires the next generation to push the boundaries of what humankind can achieve. When you see them again, think of the team out in the Australian sheep paddock who brought them to Earth.
And I'm sure everybody must have cheered in the control room. Everyone must have let off a cheer because it's such an amazing thing. It could have gone wrong in so many ways, but it has actually succeeded.
This is Ashley Byrne for DW.